Okay, we're going to start here with the Mishnah on the top of Nun Vav and Aleph. The Mishnah says, "I know Dermin Abayit Mutar Baliyah." Someone takes a netter to restrict themselves in the house. They are Mutar Baliyah. They are allowed to utilize or go into the second level of the house. Divi Rabbi Meir. But Chamim Omrim. On the other hand, the Chamim say Aliyah Bichlal Abayit. The Aliyah is subsumed under the Bayit, meaning that it is a part and parcel of the Bayit. If a person restricts themselves in the Bayit, then they're also restricted in the Aliyah. By no dermin Aliyah, mutar b'bayit. If someone takes a nether to restrict themselves in the Aliyah, then they are mutar in the Bayit. Rashi says, divrei akol, that's according to everybody. Even Rabbi Meir agrees that the word Aliyah, or when you specify the Aliyah, that's distinct from the Bayit, and the two are not synonymous with each other. Now, the truth is that the Gemara in Baba Batra says that the person who sells a house also sells the Aliyah with it. So in general, we would assume that the Aliyah is a subset or subordinate to the house, and therefore the question here seems academic because the Aliyah is always included in the Bayit. So what you have to say is that it depends where you're located, and we've seen this in the Nedarim a lot, depends where the Bayit and the Aliyah are. In certain locations, the Aliyah is a part and parcel of the Bayit, and you would never see the two as being separate units. Whereas maybe in a place where there was denser housing and they rented out separately the Bayit and the Aliyah, there you could see the Bayit and the Aliyah being separate, and that might be where Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim are having their machloket. So Gemara wants to know, Mantano. So who is the author of this Braita? The Braita is really a Braita from Torat Kohanim, deals with Negaim. Now the question of what the word is over here, the word could either be Babayit, which is Kanega Nira Li Babayit, or the word could be Babayit, which is from the word Beit Eretz Achuzatchem. And it seems that Tosafot raises the issue that the girsa that we have seems to be very problematic. And therefore, he opts for an alternate girsa in the Gemara over here, which actually changes which word we're darshaning. So the way that we have it in our Gemara is Mantana Babayit, the Rabot et Ayitziah. Babayit, the Rabot et Aliyah. That the word Babayit comes to include the Yitziah, which is unclear. Yitziah is either a small area that used for storage, or it's a placement or location above the mirpeset. It's a smaller sub-location within the house. So the babayit would come to include the yitziah, and then babayit would also come to include the aliyah. So I'm Rav Chista, Rabbi Meir, it's got to be Rabbi Meir. Dir Rabbanan, Hamri Rabbanan, aliyah bichlal abayit. Because according to the Rabbanan, you don't have to say anything extra. You don't need a riboy to include the aliyah. It's part of the bayit. So, lovely krah. Why do I need the pasuk, but bayit, the ribuya? Why do I need that extraneous wording in the pasuk to teach me that the aliyah is included? You would have said that anyway. Just by the word bayit itself would have included the aliyah. So now, that's the way that the Gemara reads here. The problem with that, and Tosafot raises the issue, he says, Hiksha Rabbi Yitzchak, Hadarshinan bikirota bayit, velo bikira yitziah. We have an explicit drasha in Torat Kohanim that it's only in the walls of the house, but not in the walls of the yitziah. So that means that the yitziah is not included in the din of Nigaim. Now all of a sudden here we have a riboy that's including it. Therefore he says, Vamaram Kohen, Braita ita betorat Kohanim, vegasinan lahachi. He brings a Braita from Torat Kohanim that has an alternate girsa. And the girsa is like this. Instead of saying kenega nira li babayit, and then we have babayit rabot etziyah, the Iran here claims that the word is from the bebeit eretz achuzatchem, and instead of la rabot etziyah, but rather it is la rabot etzavua. It comes to include that which is colored walls. Why would you have a havamina that colored walls should be different? That's because by bigadim, by nige bigadim, over there, the Torah says that the tzemer is like the pishtim. Just like the pishtan is white, and that's its color, the linen is white, so too the tzemer has to be white. And therefore, colored tzemer is not subject to nigei begadim. And we have a hekesh in the pasuk between nigei begadim and nigei bayit. So you would have thought by nigei bayit also, colored walls would be excluded from the din of nigeim. So what is the word Babayit come to teach you, the rabot et tzavua, to come to include that which is colored. I mean, colored walls would also be included. Now, obviously that's not relevant to our sugi over here, but that change makes it more palatable because then we're not including the yitziah, which seemingly was excluded from another drasha, and rather they have the drasha being hatzavua instead of hayitziah. But the main focus, obviously, is in the second part of the drasha, which is Babayit, the Rabot et Aliyah, or Rebeit Eruz Hakuzatchem, is the Rabot et an Aliyah. And because of that, it seems like this bright does, according to Rabbi Meir, because he requires a specific Riboy in order to include the Aliyah. Without that Riboy, he would not have included the Aliyah. So Amar Abaye rejects this and says, Abaye Amar, Afilu Teima Rabbanan. Even according to the Rabbanan, Baye Kra, we need a Pasuk, the Sakadat Chamina. I would have thought, Beveit Eretz Achuzetchem, the Pasuk of Beveit Eretz Achuzetchem, Ktiv, Dimichabar Ba'ara, Shmei Bayit. Because that which is attached to the ground is called a house. Aliyah, Halo Michabar Ba'ara. On the other hand, that Aliyah, the upper level, is not attached to the ground. Now this is all technical because, truthfully, the Aliyah is considered Mechubar the Karka in the technical sense. Because if you look at it from Mitzad Tuma, Mitzad anything else, it is deemed to be Mechubar the Karka through its attachment to the house. But what we're saying here is that if the Pasuk gives you an additional Riboy of Beit Eretz Achuzetchem, demanding that it be tied to the land itself, then the Bayit, which is directly on the land, is included, whereas the Aliyah, which is not directly, but only through the Bayit is attached to the land, would be excluded. So that might have been your Havamino, that only the Bayit, which is Michaber Ba'aro, is called a Bayit or subject in Nigayim. The Aliyah, which is not Michaber Ba'aro, is not. And therefore, you need the Riboy even according to the Chachamim. So, Kaman Azla, Hadam Rav Huna Bar Chiya Mishmei D'Ula. According to who does this Memra of Rav Huna Bar Chiya in the name of Ula go? Bayit Bebeiti Ani Mocher Lecha. Person says, I'm going to sell you a house among my houses. Ani Mocher Lecha, I'm going to sell you this. Mar'ehu Aliyah. He can show him an Aliyah. Yeah, that is considered to be a Bayit amongst his in my house. So Gemara says, "Time Modamalar Bayit Shibibeti Ani Mocher Lecha." That's only because he said a house among my houses, or house in my house, that he said that. That language allows him to show him an Aliyah. Aval Bayit Stam, had he just used the word Bayit by itself, Enu Mareo Aliyah, he would not be allowed to do that. So it sounds from the Lashon, that's only because you use this strange formulation, which is Bayit Beveiti, a house amongst my house, or amongst my houses, or in my house. That's what allows you to show the Aliyah. On the other hand, if you just use the word Bayit, then you would not be able to show him the Aliyah. Again, who does that sound like? Leimak Rabbi Meiri. Let's say that that's like Rabbi Meir, because the word Bayit by itself would not have included an Aliyah. Where it says, no, Afilu Teima Rabbanon. It could even be the Rabbanon here. My Aliyah. What is the Aliyah? Meula Shibabatim. Or, as the other gears of the Masorah Tashaz brings, is Meula Shibinichasim. You bring the best. So the word Aliyah can mean one of two things. In both cases, it means something similar. Aliyah means the upper level. But sometimes Aliyah can mean Meula, the better one, the upper, but the upper not in the sense of height, but upper in the sense of qualitatively, it's better. So that's the way they can describe. When it says here, Bayit Beveiti Ani Mocher Lecha, Me'eru Aliyah doesn't mean the upper level. Me'eru Aliyah means you have to show them the best. Bayit Beveiti means Miuchad Shebeveiti, the best, or the unique, the special one. And because of that, you have to show them the best. So that's how the Rabbanan would interpret that statement, and therefore they could fit in to that statement. The Rishonim, the Tosafot, raises the issue. The Ran also discusses it as well, is that there's a parallel sugya Menachot that is the source for this Memra. And over there, the Gemara has a very different approach. The Gemara over there says the reason that he can show him the Aliyah is because it says, Yad Balashtar Atachtona. The person who's trying to make the claim always has the lower hand. Because the Shtar just writes Bayit Shebeiti. There are multiple interpretations to that. Well, he's a motzi mechavero alav haraya, and since he can't prove what the language means, we're going to minimize what the language means. The minimal amount, or the minimized version of that language, is the aliyah. That's how the Gemara there describes it, or tells us why he's allowed to show him the aliyah. Based on that, it would sound like that we believe that aliyah is a davar garua, is something that is negative or lesser. And that's why Yad Balashtar Tachtona, you give it to him. Which will go against the conclusion of the Gemara here, which is the Rabbanon's interpretation that says that it's Mi'uleh Shibibatim, that it's the best. And the word Aliyah means best, and over there, the Gemara is clearly concluding that Aliyah means worse, or something negative. So how do we reconcile between the Gemara over here and the Gemara over there? One way is to say that the Gemara over there is following the Shita of Rabbi Meir. And that would indicate that we paskin like Rabbi Meir and not the Chachamim. So that's one way to look at it. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosafot say this here, and the Ramban also takes the same Shita, that that's not the case, that the Maskana over there can even follow the Shita of the Rabbanon, because you could say, Hayda Nakat Bayit Shebeiti, Lo Nakat Bayit Stam, Lo Mi Bayi Kamar. It's telling you not only this, Lo Mi Bayi Bayit Stam, if you just said the word Bayit by itself, Demereu Aliyah, then for sure you can show him the Aliyah, because you had Balashtar Ala Tachtona. What Gemara is coming to teach you is that even if you say Bayit Bebeiti, so even though there it sounds like you're giving him something more than just plain Bayit, still you can show him the Aliyah because you don't have to show him the best, but Yad Balashtar Ala Tachtona. So what that shows you is that this language, even though it seemingly is in a language that would have given you more over there in the nature of a transaction, the buyer has the lower hand because he can't prove what the language means. And therefore, we're going to go to the minimum interpretation of that statement, and the lowest denominator in that statement would mean to show him the Aliyah, because that would qualify as Bayit Shebeiti. And even though normally you would think of it as being something better, but nevertheless, he can't prove it there. Since the language has both meanings, therefore, we would say that we give him the lower hand, and because of that, he gets the Aliyah. So that's how the Rishonim continue to defend the position of the Rabbanon, even though the Gemara there seems to follow the Shita of Rabbi Meir, in order to not have that Gemara paskin like Rabbi Meir. And that would leave open the possibility that the Rabbanon Shita could fit into the Gemara Imen Achot as well. Right now we move on to the next Mishnah. Anuder min amita, someone who takes a neder from a bed, mutar bidargash. He's mutar in the dargash. The Gemara will ask what a dargash is and explain what it is. Generally, a dargash is normally known as a footstool or a stepping stool. It was some sort of platform to get up to the bed. The bed was much higher up. So the way that you climbed onto the bed is that you had this dargash that allowed you to climb onto it. That's a more generic explanation of what a dargash is. Over here, the Gemara is going to ask in for specifics and what's the connection to the mita. So here, noder min ha mita, mutar bedargash, divrei Rabbi Meir. Chachamim omim, dargash bichlal mita. And the Chachamim believe that dargash is a subcategory of mita, or is included under the word mita. Anuder min hadargash, mutar b'mita. On the other hand, someone takes a nether from the dargash, is permitted in the bed. And again, Rashi says over here, divrei akol. Everybody agrees here. Both the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir agree that the word dargash by itself is not synonymous with mita. And you say dargash, it means dargash and not mita. Mar asks the question, my dargash. What is this dargash? Amaula arsa de gado. It is the bed of God. Now we've seen this before, actually. The Gemara has brought it up in a number of other places. But the Arsa de Gado has to do with, call it a good luck bed. It was a bed that was set out or put in place for good luck or mazal tov. Rashi says over here, mitash ochim ota the mazal. It's a bed that they make for mazal. Vein shum adam yashen aleh. And nobody sleeps on it. It's not a bed that is utilized as a bed for sleeping. It's a bed that is put in place for the mazal. And Tosafot says something, the same thing. He says that mita hasuya de chavod. It's made for the honor ulamazel vein yoshvim aleh. So it's a decorative bed, but the nature of this decorative bed is there to bring good luck to the house or bring mazel to the house, and that's more of a in a general sense that that was something that was done to honor the house or made something that was for good luck. The Rosh has a more detailed explanation that brings it closer to why or what the meaning behind this good luck is over here, and he says that. Ki, Sara datiruta nakir shimei. The sar, the minister of wealth, is nakir shimei. Nakir, we've seen the word before, nakir means to be clean or cleanliness. And this wealth is found in houses that are kept clean. So the nakir is the name of the sar, and so there's a correlation between cleanliness, neatness, and the wealth. Somewhat along the lines of the modern idiom, cleanliness is next to godliness. And therefore, this establishing of this bed, akach mechinim tamid mita mutzat l'nikiyut. So they always have a bed that's permanently made in order to keep something that is always neat and clean. So that'll be the hosting chair for the god, for this, whether it's a shade or a sar, that he'll have a place to go and he'll always find a place to come. This is clearly one of those things that lives on the fine line between nichush and what is appropriate or considered to be okay. The way that Rashi and the Tosafot interpreted it, it's much easier. It was just a bed that was decorative. It was there for mazel. It was a nice thing. but it's not connected directly to this idea of a sar or a shade or some sort of belief that he came. Others believe it was like the Rosh says over here, and the Ran brings a similar interpretation. It says, So he brings the source for such a thing, and he says it's put there for the sar of the house, in order for him to have a place to come. I would say similar to Kisei Eliyahu, where you put out something where we're going to greet, or we expect Eliyahu Navi to come and to be at a Brit Milah. So it's over here, you expect the sar habayit to come, so you have this bed that's mutzat, but not that we believe that there's any power to the sar, but just that this person is, or this sar, or this shade is a shliach of Hashem, and therefore, as a shliach of Hashem, this is a way to honor Hashem. So that's the nature of this dargash. So Amalei Rabbanan Ula, Hatnan, that explanation is somewhat difficult because we have a Mishnah that tells us that Kishahein Mavrinoto, when the people take care of the Kohen Gadol who's an Avel, and they do Havara, they take care of him and they provide him with his food and his meal after the burial. Kol ha'am misubim al ha'aretz, all the people sit on the ground, who may save al ha'dargash. And he sits on this dargash. The reason is because he's the Kohen Gadol. So in order to maintain the semblance of respect and differentiation, the people sit on the ground and he sits on a dargash. So Gemara says, I don't understand that. Kula shata lo yativala. The whole year round, nobody sits on this bed. It's the mazel tov bed. Not a single person sits on it. It's there, set, made, but not used. And then the day of his Avelut, that's what he does. He goes and sits on the bed. He uses it on the day of Avelut. It seems almost incongruous with what we're trying to do. And Avel generally does something that is down on the ground, lowly, not something. Here he's using a bed that was made up for the mazel, and he leaves it there for specially to use during his Avelut. That seems improper. So Gemara said, Matki for Ravina. Why is that a problem? Either have a bus or a yayin. The kulashata. It's similar to meat and wine for the whole year. Ibo yachil. Ibo yachil. If he wants to eat meat and wine all year round, he has a choice. He can eat it. He doesn't eat it. How yoma, on that day of the Avelut, anon yavinan leit. We give him to eat, or more appropriately, not about the meat, but much about the wine. We give him to drink wine. Because, based on the pasuk, it says that, v'yayin the marei nefesh. That wine is for those that are bitter souls, for those that are despondent, we give them wine. I mean, that wine was used as a way to uplift the spirits of the Avel and to take him out of his despondency. Even though he doesn't drink wine all year round, or he doesn't necessarily have to drink wine all year round, that's over here, we compel him to drink wine. Again, that practice was earlier, later on was removed, or we stopped the practice of drinking wine because of the outcome that people were drinking too much and becoming drunk and was becoming inappropriate, so they don't serve wine at all at the Avelut. But there isn't necessarily a correlation between the lack of basar and yayin and Avelut, which actually comes up now. It's in Yana Diyoma. During the 9 days, the practice is not to eat meat and not to eat wine. So many people associate that with the Avelut, but that's not true. And Avel technically is mutar bebasar and mutar beyayin. I mean, again, today the minog is not to have yayin, but originally there's nothing incongruous between yayin and Avelut. That's not a problem. And so basar beyayin during this period of time is not because of Avelut. There are one or two reasons brought in the poskim for not eating meat and drinking wine during this period. One of them, which is much more minor, seems to be that they bring happiness, that they bring a certain amount of simcha in simcha la basar beyayin. And that simcha is inappropriate during this time of the 9 days. The other reason brought is because basar and yayin are the major categories of items that go on the mizbeach. And therefore, as a zecher l'churban, we don't eat basar v'yayin, the zecher l'churban. That is based on the Gemara in Baba Batra, that over in that time period after the churban, the people didn't want to eat basar v'yayin at all. And there the Gemara talks about a conversation that takes place between these people who wanted to remember the Qurban and therefore were desisting from Basar V'yayin. And along comes Tana there and says, well, if you're going to desist from that, you have to stop this, you have to stop this, then you can't drink water, you can't eat bread, you can't do all these other things in the Mikdash. So he says you have to manage it. It has to be done in a proper way. You can't stop living. You can't leave the world entirely, but you have to learn how to manage it, that there's things that you do Zecher the Qurban that are in particular or we have certain simanim that we do it, and there's certain periods of time where it's appropriate. Again, that this period of time is a time period where it would be appropriate to desist from yain and basar in order to do the zecher l'churban. But it's not necessarily connected with avelut. And that's what we're saying over here, that basar v'yayin, even though it's optional all year round, over here we compel him to drink wine in order to tend to his avelut. So that's not so problematic that all year round he didn't sit on his bed and also now he uses the bed. That happens. That is part, sometimes avelut compels us to do certain things. The Gemara says, okay, if that's the case, elaha kasha. That's not our problem with the dargash being a arsa de gado, but rather this is the problem with the Tanya. Dargash lo haya kofeyu elo zokfo. When it comes to avelut, a practice that we don't have today anymore, but we saw this back in Moed Katan, was that they flipped all the beds. They flipped all the beds in the house. And over here it says that the dargash lo haya kofeyu. They did not flip that bed elo zokfo. So most of the Rishonim believe, you can see it in Rashi and the Tosafot, zokfo means that you stand it upright, and we'll see that on the second half of the daf today as well. That means that instead of flipping the bed over, totally over, you just stand it up on one of its sides. So it's unusable, but it's not completely flipped over. On the other hand, the Rosh over here says, Klomer minichol kamo shehu zakuf vein lefaresh zokfo atzido. The Rosh over here says that the meaning of the bright here is not that you flip it over its side, but you just leave it alone. You don't flip it at all. Where it says, V'yamart arsa de gadohu, if you say it's this bed that is for good luck, V'atanyo, don't we have a braita? Kufet mitato, lo mitato bilvadu kufet. When you flip over your bed in the house for avelut, you don't just flip over your bed. El kol mito chiesh lo bito chabaitu kufet. Any bed that's in the house gets flipped over. And Rashi says that the arsa de gadohu is a mita chashuvai. It's a significant bed. It's something that is of significance. If you're flipping up over the beds in the house, then you would include this bed as being one of those beds that you would have flipped over because of its significance. So if that's the case, how can you claim that this is arsa de gadol if there's no requirement to flip it over when you're found in the Beit Avel? Because here we see that any mitah that is found in the house of the Avel is flipped over. The Gemara says, wait a minute, halo kasho, that's not a problem. It's similar to a bed that is not used for sleeping on. A bed that is used to take care of kelim, storage, for whatever other reason besides sitting or sleeping on, those beds do not require to be flipped. Titania. If you have a bed that is designated for storage, that's not used for sitting on, not used for laying on, then you don't have to flip it over. So let's say the same thing here. With regards to the arsa de gadol, it's never used for sleeping on. It's never used for sitting on because nobody uses it at all. So if that's the case, it's not required to be flipped over. It's not a mitah, a bed in the sense of what needs to be kviata mitah. Kviata mitah is that you no longer sleep on the bed, that you don't lay on the bed, or the siman that your bed has been overturned, meaning that your mazal or things that have happened to you have been overturned. So that's only special or meaningful when you're talking about your bed or something that's used for sitting or sleeping on. Things that are used for storage or things that are never slept on or never sat on, that's not as a meaning in the sense of kfiyat mitah. Where it says, Ela ikasha hakasha. This is a problem to explain that it's an arsa de gadol de tanya. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel omer, dargash martir karvitav, v'hu nofel me'elav. When it comes to dargash, you release its loops and it falls by itself. Vi dargash arsa de gadohu. And if a dargash is really this good luck bed, karvitin mitlai, since when does it have karvitin in it? So since it doesn't have karvitin in it, then you can't talk about releasing its karvitin. So the Gemara sees the explanation of dargash, if you say that it's an arsa de gadol, not being able to reconcile with this bright of Rav Shimon Gamliel, who says that if you have a dargash, the way you deal with it, in terms of being kofet amitah, is that you release its karvitin. So by letting it go, you deal with doing the kfiyat mitah. But that means it has to have loops. And either it doesn't have loops, for whatever reason, as Rashi says over here, that kimlehu, the Rabbanan knew that it didn't have karvitin, or it was well known that this arsa de gadol did not have karvitin. Or it wasn't a normal bed, and so you wouldn't have expected it to have these karvitin. So now the Gemara has to move to a different explanation of what this dargash is. Kiyat Ravin. Amar Shilte Lahaume Rabbanon. Rabban, when he came from Eretz Yisrael, he says, I inquired of this Rabbanon, Rav Tchaflifa Bar Marava Shemei, and this was the name of the individual, this Amora that I spoke to. that he frequently visited the marketplace of the leather makers. Vamarli, my dargash. So then he explained to me what this dargash is, meaning that he has exposure to these leather makers and to people who work with leather. And he said, I'll tell you what a dargash is. It's an arsa detzala. It's a bed that uses a leather throw as the mattress. So in their day, you had different ways to make a bed or have mattresses on the bed. One way was to do it through ropes, which was the main way, that they strung ropes from side to side in the bed and then from top to bottom on the bed. And then on that, they used to pack on a sheet and hay on top of that, and that was your bed. The other way to do it was to have a throw that was in the middle. That was the mattress. And then you tied the throw to the frame of the bed. So what he says is this dargash is not your regular mita that uses ropes across, but rather a bed that uses a throw, a leather throw in the middle to be the mattress. So now, itmar, ezu mita, vezu dargash. What is the difference between a bed and a dargash? Amaravia, mita misarginota gaba, dargash misarginota migufo. The difference is that a bed, when you tie the ropes onto the bed, onto the frame of the bed, you tie the ropes over the frame itself. You tie the ropes around the frame and then back to tie it together. On the other hand, when it comes to dargash, they actually drilled holes into the frame. And therefore, when you pass the rope through the frame, you pass it into the frame itself, not around the frame. And that's the difference between a mitah and a dargash, is how they are secured to the side or to the frame of the bed. When it comes to a mitah, it's secured around the frame. Whereas for a dargash, it's secured in the frame itself. It's tied inside. There's a hole through the frame that allows you to tie it to it. Now, meitavei, is that really the case? Can that explanation be correct? Kli eitz, me'ematai mikablim tuma. When it comes to a kli eitz, when do they become tamei? Many of the Mishnayot and Kelim are discussing when is a kli considered to be finished. Because a kli is only mikabel tuma once it reaches its finished state, or close enough to its finished state that it's usable. So many times in the Mishnayot and Kelim, they're trying to define for us what is that final stage, or what is that threshold over which the item becomes then a kli and is mekabel tuma. So there the Mishnah says, Amita barisa, mishi yeshufeim b'or hadag. It's after you sand them down with the fish skin. So the fish skin, which is scaly and has a roughness to it, it was used as their sandpaper. So once you sand down the frame of the bed, the wooden frame of the bed, that's when it's mekabel tuma. Now, be'i mita mistareget agaba, if a bed, a normal bed, the way that it's tied, meaning the way that the bed is secured to the frame, is by taking the ropes over the frame itself, lamali shifat or adag. Then why would you sand the frame down? The reason to sand the frame down is because there's sharp pieces to it, they're pieces that stick out. That's only relevant if you're going to be able to touch the frame or the frame is going to come into contact with you. If you run the ropes around the frame itself, on top of the frame, then you're never going to sit on the frame itself. You're not going to come into contact with the frame because the ropes or the sirug is going over and around the frame. And therefore, you wouldn't need to sand it down because the ropes themselves are going to protect you or keep whatever you're placing on top above the frame itself. So that doesn't make so much sense. Ella, you have to say, hava hami gufan. The way that they are secured to the bed frame is the same, which is through a hole in the frame itself. Both a regular mita and a dargash, both of them are secured to the frame in the same way, which is there's a hole in the frame and they loop the rope through that hole in the frame. What's the difference? Mita aule vafuke bivzine. The mita goes directly, ties directly through the hole to the item itself, whatever the mattress is, whether it's other ropes that are there or some other throw that's in the middle. Whatever it is, it's tied directly from that item to the frame itself. Dargash, aule vafuke bivkato. On the other hand, by a dargash, what they do is they set up loops in the holes of the frame, and then you tie the throw to those loops that are around there. So there's, say, a derivative attachment. Instead of being directly attached, like the mitah, where it's directly attached to the frame, through the frame, by the dargash, there are loops that are directly attached to the frame, and then you attach the dargash to those loops. So that's the difference between a dargash and a mitah. Now, why then would you have a difference in the din? Because over here we're saying that when it comes to a dargash, martir karvitav, he releases the loops, and it falls by itself. Now we understand that. We understand why that happens. So we could be talking about this arsa detzalo. We're talking about this leather throw that is attached to the frame of the bed. But how it's attached to the frame of the bed is through these loops. So we understand Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's statement that the reason that we release the loops to allow it to come off is because that's how it's attached. It's attached through loops. But the more basic question is, why don't you just do kfiata mita? Why don't you just flip it over like you do with any other bed? So here there are different reasons given. Rashi says over here, holal ve'ena chashuva. Since it's not so significant, lo yakufa el zokfa v'doyo. That when it comes to this arsa d'tzavo, instead of flipping it over completely, you stand it up on its side, or you do something else that is less significant in terms of the kfiata mita. So you don't have to do a full kfiata mita over here because it's not such a significant bet. That's how Rashi explains it. On the other hand, Tosafot says here, the reason is because he says that the nature of the dergash is that it's always very low to the ground. So even when you flip it over, it doesn't seem to change the nature of the bed. A bed, which is much higher off the ground, so you have bed posts that hold the bed up. If you flip the bed over, even if there's some posts that come up over the top of the frame, nevertheless, when you flip it over, you've taken it from being very high off the ground to very close to the ground. So you've changed the nature of the bed by being kofed the bed. On the other hand, the dargash, which sits much lower to the ground, if you end up flipping it over, it still remains low to the ground. It looks no different than it did before you flipped it over. So Tosafot says that that's the difference is because there's no distinction, nothing obvious when you flip over a dargash that you actually did kfiata mita. And so based on that, you have to do something else here, whether it's zokfo, whether you have to stand it up or you release the loops. That's the way that you have to deal with it. Tosafot says the reason for that is because of the way that it's tied. He says over here that it's tachar arukot, that the way that the dargash was tied is not level with the bed frame, and not up at the level of the bed frame, but sank below the bed frame, so that kept it much lower to the ground. So by nature, by definition, the dargash is always lower than the mita. Now, the Rosh, on the other hand, says over here that the reason that you don't do kfiata mita by the dargash is lefisha or mitkalgel benago baretz, patrua mikfiat. If you had to flip it over, then the throw would be on the ground and would get all dirty. So in order to exempt them from having to make the dargash all dirty, they came over the way. You can release it from the bed, and that'll solve your problem, because then you don't have to put it on the floor. You don't have to ruin this throw by having it on the floor. So for whatever the reason is, according to Rashi, Tosafot, or the Rosh, the reason that you do not do kfiata mita by the dargash, therefore we allow you to either do the skifa or you release the loops, and then it falls away. Now the Gemara continues and says, Amar Rav Yaakov bar Acha, Amar Rabbi, mita, shenakliteha yotzim. If you have a bed that has a canopy on it, the nakliteha are posts. There's a post at the head of the bed and a post at the foot of the bed, which allows for a bar to crawl across from the top to the bottom of the bed, and then they hang a canopy over the bed. So those nakliteha, if you have this, we'll call it like a bed board at the top, or something that sticks out at the top and the base at the foot of the bed, then you can't flip it over. It's just physically impossible to flip it over because the nakliteha sit in the way, so you can't flip the bed. So what you do is, zokfa v'dayo. You stand it up, and that's enough. So most of the Rishonim read here, zokfa, literally, is that you put it up on its side. You flip it either onto the two legs at the end, or the top, or onto its side, and that's the equivalent of kfiata mita, because you can't flip it over entirely. On the other hand, Tosafot reads over here, what does it mean, zokfa? Poreis beged, boto lulaot, shibresheah naklitim, velikot fuish, in rashu de shiva. That instead of flipping it over, you spread something across the bed, and it makes it that you can no longer access the bed because of this sheet that is thrown over it, and gives you the equivalent effect of kfiata mita, which is you can't use it anymore. That's what Tosafot says. Tosafot says instead of flipping it, you just throw something on top of it that makes it unusable at this point. So Amar Rav Yaakov bar Idi, Amar Rabbi Shua ben Levi, halacha ki Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel above, who we saw that says dargash matir kavitav unufel me'elav, that we can use that mechanism to deal with kfiata mita of the dargash, and you don't have to flip over the dargash, according to Tosafot, where it doesn't work when you flip over the dargash. So this is the way that you deal with it, according to the Rosh and Rashi. Rashi says that it wasn't so significant, so you don't have to do a full kfiata mita, or the Rosh says we're trying to protect the throw. This is the way that you deal with it. either it's kifa or through being matir kavitav, so you don't have to do a full kfiata mita. We no longer do kfiata mita today. Shonim bring different reason as to why we don't do kfiata mita today. The most likely is it's just not relevant, that we don't have beds that flip over in that manner. Flipping over the bed is just not a, in a practical sense, like this case with the naklitin. We have the post sticking up. You can't flip the bed over. So it's not meaningful to flip the bed over. So therefore, we don't do the kfiata mita. Just because you can flip a mattress doesn't make a difference. Or the nature of how we sleep or how we come about. That's one of the reasons given by the Yishonim doesn't work, that we don't do it anymore. The other is that people are maybe istanisim today. They have that by Tisha B'Av also. By Tisha B'Av, one is not supposed to sleep on their bed. They're supposed to sleep on the floor. But then the poskim bring down that if a person is unable to handle that because they're such an istanis, then they should do something that causes them a certain amount of discomfort in the bed. If they sleep normally with two pillows, they sleep with one pillow. If they usually sleep with one pillow, they should sleep without a pillow. They should do something that creates a certain amount of discomfort. So again, that since people are deemed to be istanis today, therefore kfiata mita is not something that is manageable or people can't handle it, and therefore we do it in a much more muted fashion. Tosafot actually brings down a reason that it looks like we're doing Masik Shafim. And in order to not have the Goyim think we're doing Masik Shafim, we avoid Kfiyat Amita. The Aruch HaShulchan says the reason we don't do Kfiyat Amita is because we don't sit on the beds anymore. And when we're talking about Kfiyat Amita, we're not just talking about what you sleep on, but we're also talking about that which you sat on. And therefore, Kfiyat Amita had a relevance in terms of Kfiyat Amita and sitting on the flipped over bed, which again today would have no relevance in the terms of our beds or the way that we sit. So those are the reasons brought by the Rishonim as to why we don't do kfiyat mita today. Alright. Anoder minair mutar likanes l'tchuma. Actually, someone takes a neder not to get hana or not to access a city, he's allowed to go into the tchum. He's allowed to go into the area that surrounds the city. Vasur likanes l'ibura. On the other hand, he's restricted from going to the ibur. So what's clear here is that you have different delineations of the city limits. So the Ibur is a tighter circle around the city limits, and Tchum is a much larger area. Tchum in general is easy to know. We know it's a locha that comes up in Eruvin, so Tchum is 2,000 amot. So we know that he's allowed to access the 2,000 amot. What Iburashal ir is, there is a halachic definition which we found in Eruvin, which is 70 3/4 amot away from the city. That's considered to be the Iburashal ir. It has significance in Eruvin if you have two cities that are adjacent to each other. If they are connected, if their Iburim overlap, or they're within that context, and they're considered to be one city for Eruvin, and you don't start the Tchum till the outside of the two cities. That's one possibility, and most of the Rishonim explain it that way. Rashi over here brings the other possibility, which is Iburashu Ir, is the way that we determine the circumference of the city. Gemara Eruvin tells us that many cities are not built in exactly a square or a circle, so that you know you can set up the tchum from outside the city. So how do you measure where the end of the city is? So there the Gemara tells us in Eruvin that if you have pieces of the city that stick out, houses that stick out, or you have towers that stick out, then you draw a straight line from those towers and you make that as if those are the equivalent delineating spaces of the end of the city. And so that's what he calls Iburashal Ir, basically the pregnant area of the city, because we extend the city even to those areas that jut out of the city. Rashi claims Iburashu Ir means the limits of the city, but the city itself. It's not something like when we talk about an area that extends beyond the city, which we call the city limits, but rather the city itself. What is the delineating line of the city itself? And then again, it's not exactly, it doesn't follow the wall exactly. It follows the location that's the furthest out, and then we circumscribe the city with a circle based on the way that the city is laid out at the furthest point. So that's what Rashi calls the Iburashu Ir. But it says that a person takes a neder, he's allowed to enter the tchum, which is the, we call the outer limits, or the furthest point that's still considered relevant to the city. But he may not enter the iburair, which is something that's much closer to the city and much more a part of the city. Now, aval, anoder min habayit, on the other hand, when a person takes a neder not to get enough from a house, asur min agaf v'lifnim, he's not restricted from the outer limits of the house, but rather, he's only restricted from the door jamb and inward. So over there, they have a possibility where you might still be within, let's call it the house itself, you'll still be within the porch walking into the house. Or you might still be under the lintel or walking on the iskopa that's below the doorstep coming in, but nevertheless, you're still not past the door jamb. And as long as you're outside of the door jamb, that's not considered to be the house itself. So that's distinct from the city, where the city has influence over the spaces around it, where you may not enter, even though the city's already ended. Over here, the delineation of the house is very exact at the door jamb, even though you might still be within the shadow or the shade of the house itself. So Gemara says, Minolon di ibura de mato kemato adami. How do we know that the ibur of the ear is considered like be the city itself? Rabbi Yochanan Damakra, the Pasuk says in Yoshua, Vahi biot Yoshua biricho. When Yoshua was in Yericho, my biricho. How is it possible that Yoshua is in Yericho? If you're going to say that he was literally inside of Yericho, that Yericho was completely closed. They're laying siege to the city because it's impossible to get in and out of the city. How can you say that Yoshua is in the city? That he was in the area around the city, and therefore he was deemed to be as if he was in the city. It called him Biricho, even though he's literally not in the city. That shows you that the city or the shame of the city or the influence of the city extends beyond the walls of the city. So when it says Ema filo b'tchuma, how do you know where that goes to? Maybe that means even the tchum. Even you went out 2,000 amot, that would still be considered as if you're in the city. Haktiv b'tchuma, because we already have something that tells us about the tchum of the city, the parsha that we read on Shabbat, which is umadotem mechutz la'ir, that you measure from outside of the city 2,000 amot by the arei halevi'im. When you measure out from the city, you measure the 2,000 amot. When there it says, michutz la'ir, outside of the city. So it delineates the tchum of the city, or the 2,000 amot that extend from the city, as being michutz la'ir. They're outside the city. So tchum is clearly outside the city. So it has to be something less than tchum. What's less than tchum? An area that has halachic significance. That's the iburah shalir. Whether that means the 70 and 3/4 or so amot, or whether that means the way Rashi says it, it means the extension of the city, to square it out or to create a straight line. Either one of those are considered to be a part of the city, and that's how we learn it. We learn it here from this statement of the Navi by Yehoshua. No der min abayit, eno asur ele min agaf vilifnim. Ava min agaf lachutz, lo. That implies that outside of the door jam, it's not a problem. Meitiv Rav Mari, we have a problem because of the din by Nigaim. It says, v'yatza koyim min abayit. The coin goes out of the house. So the kohen came to check out the nega and the bayit, and then he leaves the house. Yochol yelech lebeito v'yazgir. You think he'd go home and then close up the house? Tamalomar el petach habayit. He goes outside of the house, and at the doorway to the house, he is sugir. He closes up the house and declares it tamei. Yo petach habayit yachol yamol tachar hamashkof v'yazgir. You would think he would stand under the lintel, and he would close it up. Tamalomar. Minabayit, that it's from the house. Actually, I'd say minabayit kulo. You have to leave the house entirely. So how do we balance from minabayit and el petach abayit? He's supposed to be by the doorway, but he needs to be out of the house. How do you balance or reconcile between those two? Haketzad. How do we explain that? Omeid b'tzad hamashkof v'yasgir. He stands by the lintel, the overhang, and he closes it. Minayim shem halacha beito v'yasgir. How do we know if he went home and he shut the door? Or he stand under the shakuf and he closed it up. She's giro musgar, that it works. No matter how he does it, in the end, it works. So there's a proper way to do it. But b'diavad, if he doesn't do it that way, then it still works to do the closing of it. The Rashi over here describes the difference between a shakuf and a mashkof. So he says here that shakuf is hanoi skopa. The shakuf is the doorstep. And the mashkof is the lintel that's above the doorway. And that's the different usage here of the word mashkof versus shakuf. Although you would have to say over here, I don't know how you'd say shamad tachad shakuf. You would have to say that he's, as Rashi says over here, bitzad shakuf. You'd have to change the gear so he doesn't stand under the doorstep. He would have to be on top of the doorstep or bitzad. They have to be near the doorstep. And that's the way Rashi has a different gear so here because of that different explanation of what the shakuf is versus the mashkof. On the other hand, if you think that they're the same word, mashkof and shakof are the same word, then they're both referring to the lintel above the doorway. But what that shows you is that a door frame, in general, can be much larger than where the door actually hits the jamb. And that we have today in the modern doors, you have that. The door jamb is in the middle of the door, but the frame itself is larger than the door itself, and you have that much more extensively in entrances to houses. where you can have it, especially in their day when you're building out of stone, then you have large door frames, but the door itself closes at some point in the middle of the frame. So you can have, or you can have a position where you're standing outside the door, you're under the mashkof, you're standing on the skopa, and yet you're outside the house. And what you see, the way that we're describing here, is that you could be outside the doorway and still be under the lintel or on the doorstep, and you would be considered outside the house. On the other hand, the way that the Gemara describes it over here from the drosha by Negayim, it sounds like that you have to leave the house entirely. And therefore, when you said El Petach HaBayit, you would have assumed that he was still under the lintel or he was standing on the doorstep. And that's the way to do it. The drosha says no, that you have to leave the house entirely. But the implications of that are that while you're still under the lintel on the doorstep, you're still considered to be in the house. And that goes against what we said in our Mishnah. Now, the somewhat difficult part of this is that we know that the din of Nidarim is that halei chachar lashon b'nei adam. So the fact that you bring me a proof from the Pasuk, why does it matter? Lashon ha-Torah l'chud, lashon b'nei adam l'chud. The way the Torah expresses it is one thing. The way the people express it is different. We've seen this before, that when we have somewhat of a stira from the Pesukim, then we don't worry about it because we're talking about what the vernacular is or the way the word is used. So why can't you can answer the same thing over here? Now, the Gemara doesn't say it over here because it seems like even within the vernacular, it wasn't clear what it meant to be mechutz labayit. So once we don't have something clear within the vernacular, then we go to the Torah to see maybe we can find the definition of the word bayit. Well, we go to the Torah and now we find that the definition of the word bayit includes anything that's there. And you'd have to leave the entirety of the bayit. If you're still under the door frame, even though you're outside the jam, you'd still be considered to be in the house. So that's the problem that's brought up from this braita. My answer is, shiny gabi bayit, dechtib min abayit, achietzei min abayit kulo. That truthfully, over there, there's an extraneous wording. It says el petach abayit, and then it says min abayit. So there's extraneous wording which says that you have to go more than just outside the house. You need to really go outside the house. So what does that mean? You have to leave the entirety of the house, including the mashkof and the skopa. You have to be outside of that completely. So that's why it's different. By Negaim, there's an extra ribui which forces you not only to leave the house, but to leave the house entirely or completely. That extra entirely or completely means you have to step out another step outside the house. On the other hand, when it comes to Nidarim, over there, we would say that the bayit ends at the door jam, and therefore if you're still in the door frame, you're okay, as long as you are outside of the door jam. And there are notes that it would be the same thing in reverse. If a person takes a neder, mikan lotan shnishmaim lamod b'bayit echad, person who says that he takes a neder to stay in one house, then, diminaigef lifnim mutarim. Then they have to stay from the door jam inward, and that would be fine. Minaigef lachutz asurim. And then from the door jam and out, they would be considered asurim, because the definition of bayit, or the threshold, which is really the word, the threshold at which the bayit starts and ends is at the door jam. And so because of that, you can be on the threshold, under the lintel, in the door frame, but outside the door jam, and it would not be considered as if you are in the house. Okay, we'll stop here at the end of Nun Vav Amud Bet, and we'll begin with the Mishnah and Zayin Amud Aleph tomorrow.